Chapter 1. I Meet a King. Rudolf Rassendyll, when in the world are you going to do something? Asked my sister-in-law one day at breakfast. You are 29 years old, she continued, and you've done nothing with your life but enjoy yourself. I put my egg spoon down. My dear Rose, I answered, why in the world should I do anything? I have almost enough money to do what I want. No one ever has quite enough money, you know. I come from an important and wealthy family. Your husband, my brother Robert, is Lord Burlesdon. That's enough for me. Good families are generally worse than others, she said, annoyed. Then she looked at my hair and said, I'm so glad that Robert's hair is black. At that moment, my brother walked in. What is the matter with you two? He asked. She's complaining about me doing nothing and having red hair, I said, sounding hurt. His hair isn't his fault, admitted Rose. It usually appears once in a generation, said my brother. And the nose too, of course. Well, I like the red hair and the nose, I said, looking proudly at the portrait of my ancestor, Lady Amelia Rassendyll, that was hanging on the wall. I wish you'd take that picture away, Robert, said Rose. I laughed and continued with my breakfast. I always find explanations in stories boring, but now that I'm writing my own story, I find I need to include one here. My dear sister-in-law was embarrassed by my red hair and my large nose because of a scandal that happened in my family in 1733. At that time, young Prince Rudolf Elfberg of Ruritania came to visit King George II. Prince Rudolf stayed in England for several months, but left suddenly and mysteriously. During his visit, he met my ancestor, Lady Amelia. 2 months after Rudolf left, she gave birth to a son. Soon after that, Rudolf Elfberg became King Rudolf III of Ruritania. If you walk through my brother's house, you'll see 50 family portraits from the last 150 years. 5 or 6 of my ancestors have red hair, long, straight noses, and blue eyes. All the other Rassendylls have dark hair and eyes. That is the explanation, and I am glad to have finished it. This type of scandal can ruin a family. My sister-in-law disliked my Elfberg hair and nose because they reminded her of my family's bad character. But I can hardly be blamed for what Lady Amelia did, and in fact, I'd done more with my life than Rose thought. I'd been to a German school and university and spoke German as well as I spoke English. I could speak French, a little Spanish, and Italian. I could use a sword and gun well, could ride any horse, and keep a cool head in any situation. If I have nothing to do, you can blame my parents for leaving me so much money that I don't have to work. Well, I just want you to do something, Rudolf, Rose said. Rose looked so pretty, and she made me feel so guilty. How could I say no? I promised her that if I was still free in 6 months' time, then I would look for a job. Oh, Rudolf, she cried. How good of you. I am glad. I now had 6 months of freedom. I loved travelling, so I decided to go and visit Ruritania. You may be surprised to learn that I'd never been to Ruritania. My father had always been secretly proud of our connection with the country's royal family. After all, he had called me Rudolf, but he'd always stopped me from going there. He was worried that I might have problems if I went because people would think I was an Elfberg. My brother agreed with him. A few days later, I read an article in the Times newspaper. There was a new king in Ruritania, and his coronation would be in 3 weeks' time. There would be a wonderful celebration in Strelsau, the capital city, to welcome the new king. I was determined to be there, and I did not want anyone to stop me, so I kept my journey a secret. I told my family I was going to have a holiday in the Austrian mountains. I arrived in Paris and booked in at the Continental. I called on my old friend, George Featherly, who works as a diplomat for the British ambassador in Paris. We had dinner together in a fine restaurant, went to the opera, and then went to see the famous poet Bertram Bertrand. There were lots of people at Bertram's flat, but he looked terribly unhappy. At the end of the evening, I asked George what was worrying him. He laughed unkindly and told me Bertram was in love with a well-known member of Paris society, Antoinette de Mauban. "Bertram's problem is that she's fallen in love with someone else," said George. "I met him last month. A charming man, Prince Michael, Duke of Strelsau. He's the younger brother of the new King of Ruritania. The Duke's gone back to Strelsau now to be at his brother's coronation," continued George. "He won't enjoy that very much, though. He was the old king's favourite, you see, and I think he's disappointed not to be the next King of Ruritania. I also think Madame de Mauban will be disappointed. I hear that Michael's got his eye on someone else." The next day, George went with me to the station, where I bought a ticket to Dresden. "What are you doing in Dresden?" asked George. George was always gossiping. If I told him I was going to Ruritania, then the news would have arrived in London in 3 days, and after less than a week, my sister-in-law and brother would have heard of it. I was just thinking of something to say when, fortunately, his attention was caught by someone else, and he rushed off. I watched where he was going and saw him raise his hat to an attractive and fashionably dressed woman. "Well, aren't you lucky?" George said when he came back. "That's Antoinette de Mauban, and she's going to Dresden too. It's rather strange, though, because she doesn't want to meet you at the moment." I felt quite offended at that. I spent the night in Dresden, and the next morning Antoinette de Mauban got on the same train as me, though I didn't speak to her. When we got to the border with Ruritania, the police officer took my passport and then stared at me very rudely. I found out that Strelsau was full of people who'd come for the coronation, and I would have problems finding a room in a hotel. I decided to get out at a town called Zender, which was 50 kilometres from the capital, and spend the night there. I was given a warm welcome at the hotel in Zender. It was owned by an old lady and her daughter, but I was surprised to find they were not at all interested in the coronation. The old lady liked Duke Michael better than the new king. "Everybody knows Duke Michael," she said. "He owns the castle of Zender, and he's always lived here. But his brother Rudolf is almost a stranger. He spent so much time abroad that most of us don't even know what he looks like." Her daughter told me the king was staying in the forest near the hotel as a guest of his brother. "Are Michael and his brother friends, then?" I asked. "They love each other as men do, who want the same thing and the same wife," said the daughter. "Black Michael, I mean Duke Michael," she said, looking over at her mother, "would give his soul to marry his cousin, Princess Flavia, but everyone thinks she'll marry the king." At that point, a man called Johann came in. He stared at me, and I thought he was very rude. The next day, though, Johann was extremely kind and helpful. He told me he worked for the Duke at the castle of Zender, and said I could stay at his sister's house in Strelsau. I had several hours before my train left for Strelsau, so I sent my bags to the station and set off to explore. I walked up the steep hill above the town of Zender to the castle, and only half an hour later was standing in front of it. The castle was divided into two parts, an old part surrounded by a wide, deep moat, and next to that, a more modern, comfortable castle. The only way into and out of the old castle was across a drawbridge, which could be opened and shut. Well, I thought, walking on, if Black Michael can't be king or marry Princess Flavia, then at least he has a comfortable castle to live in. I went into the forest and walked for an hour. The place was beautiful, and it was cool under the trees. I found somewhere to sit, and, leaning back against a tree, fell asleep. When I woke, two men were standing in front of me, staring at me with great curiosity. They were both wearing hunting clothes and had guns. One was short and fat, with small pale blue eyes. The second was much younger and thinner, with dark hair.
"He's the same height, too," the old man said as I stood up.
Then he came over to me, telling the younger man to follow. He raised his hat and greeted me politely. Then the young man also stepped forward and smiled. "This," he said, pointing to the older man, "is Colonel Sapt, and I am Fritz von Tollenheim. We are both in the service of the King of Ruritania." "My name is Rudolf Rassendyll. I've travelled from England to come to the coronation of your new king. I was in the service of the Queen of England for a year or two," I said. "Then we are all brothers of the sword." Fritz von Tollenheim held out his hand and shook mine warmly.
"Rassendyll, Rassendyll,"
muttered Colonel Sapt, and then he remembered.
"I know who you are," he said excitedly. "You're from the family of Lord Burlston. I knew it from the colour of your hair. You know that story, don't you, Fritz?"
He was laughing now. Fritz thought that Sapt had offended me, but I was not offended. "So, the story of the scandal in my family is as famous here as it is in England," I said with a smile.
"With that hair, I think everyone in Ruritania would know immediately that you're an Elfberg," said Sapt.
I began to feel uncomfortable. If I'd realised how similar I looked to the king's family, I wouldn't have travelled here. At this moment, a man's voice called from the forest.
"Fritz! Fritz! Where are you, man?"
Fritz von Tollenheim looked worried.
"It's the king," he said.
But old Sapt laughed quietly to himself. Then a young man jumped out from behind a tree, and when we saw each other, we stared in total shock. Apart from a few unimportant details, the young man and I looked exactly the same. The new king of Ruritania could have been Rudolf Rassendyll, and I, Rudolf, could have been the king. For some time, we stood completely still, looking at each other. Then I remembered I was in front of the king. I took my hat off and bowed to show my respect to him.
"Colonel, Fritz, who is this gentleman?"
the king asked. I was about to answer when Colonel Sapt stepped between the king and me and began to talk to His Majesty in a low growl. The king kept looking at me. Then he began to smile. His eyes lit up and he began to laugh so loudly the sound seemed to fill the entire forest. He came over to me.
"I'm happy to meet you, cousin," he said,
putting his hand on my shoulder.
"What's your first name?"
"Rudolf," I replied. "The same as yours, Your Majesty." The king put his arm through mine.
"Now, come and have dinner with us. I want to spend some time with you."